We obviously want to build a very big company, right? We want to be the location layer for any product or any service. I think in the early days, we needed to make some compromises and say, hey, what is that initial set of use cases or initial set of verticals that we want to go after? We were just two people, small startup. Uber had spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds of man hours building, you know, location tracking and geofencing. Whereas on the more consumer side of things, you know, so shopping and retail apps, food and dining apps, travel apps, there was a need for location awareness. There was a need for location-based features, but it wasn't as much of a core competency. My name is Nick Patrick. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Radar.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries who share in the critical moments of what it takes to change an industry and build and lead a team that has your back. I'm your host, Noah Laphart, and today how Nick Patrick set out to create the Stripe for location services built just for developers. All this and more on Code Story. Nick Patrick has had his hands in tech for most of his life. He's been dabbling in computer programming and hardware from an early age. During college, he veered away from a focus in biology towards computer science and his love for building things. He and his wife enjoy cooking, where his wife does the mise en place and Nick executes the cooking, primarily baking pizzas and cornbread. He calls this a great analog activity with a big payoff. 4 years ago, Nick was working at Handy, which is an on-demand services platform. There, he and his colleagues were tasked to build a map system with real-time, transparent location info about a service technician. He realized that this was a difficult problem to solve, and quickly found there were no third-party solutions out there, i.e., he couldn't find the Stripe or Mixpanel for location infrastructure. So, he and his co-founder set out to build Radar, to provide tools to quickly develop location-based features right into your technology.
Radar is location data infrastructure. We offer tools to help technical teams build location-based app experiences. So SDKs and APIs for things like geofencing or location search or geocoding or routing. And really got started about 4 years ago. I had the experience of working at a company called Handy, which was an on-demand services platform. And we wanted to build an Uber-style system to, you know, track our service providers on a map. Right, Uber has this amazing location-based experience where you can type in the name of a destination, you can see your driver coming to you, you can see an ETA. We basically set out to build a system like that at Handy. And I think learned firsthand how challenging that was. It seems sort of deceptively simple to start. iOS and Android have a lot of built-in location services. We found that it was kind of a pain to do, and it was hard to do it well. You know, so we put an iOS engineer, an Android engineer, a web engineer on this project, spent a couple months and, you know, ended up with something that didn't work super well, wasn't super reliable, you know, and ended up draining the battery and took a lot of iteration. And kind of reflecting on it after the fact, you know, when we wanted to do payments, we just popped in Stripe. When we wanted to do analytics, we just popped in Mixpanel. But there was no great developer-friendly full-stack solution for locations. That was the initial problem that inspired Radar. Started the company with my co-founder, Kobe Berman, who I met pre-Handy at Foursquare. And Foursquare is obviously one of the first big location-based apps. That was sort of our first taste of all the cool experiences that you could build with location. That informed, you know, how we built the company and the problem that we're solving as well.
Tell me about the MVP. Tell me about how long it took to build, what sort of tools you used in the early days to bring to life that MVP, that first product.
Yeah, the MVP for us was really a couple different pieces. One was an iOS and Android SDK that, you know, you as a developer could pop into your app to do location tracking in a very battery efficient, reliable way. The second part was a dashboard where you could visualize this data that you were collecting and do things like configure geofences. What are the types of regions that you want to monitor depending on your use case? And then some very basic integrations to, you know, send geofence entry and exit events to other systems. Maybe you're building a system where you want to send a push notification with a reminder when somebody enters a geofence. Maybe it's something more operational, like, you know, delivery tracking, and you want to send a notification when the delivery is almost there. So really three pieces: the SDK, the dashboard, and integrations. V1 was basically, hey, what can we pull together as a simple version? Over time, the product has evolved a bunch, but it still does have that core of SDK, the dashboard, and the integration. So V1 for us was, hey, what is the most basic MVP of each of those things that we can pull together?
Being the SDKs, I'm sure they were native, depending on timing, Objective-C or Swift or Java, Kotlin.
The iOS SDK is written in Objective-C, which kind of lets it run against any apps built in Objective-C or any version of Swift. The first Android SDK was in Java, although we just moved it over to Kotlin. You know, in the early days, it was very simple. We kind of had this, you know, one-size-fits-all implementation approach where we, you know, tried to find, you know, location tracking that was a balance of accuracy and battery efficiency and frequency of updates that would kind of work for any use case, you know, any consumer use case or any more operational use case. And in the early days, it was a lot of trial and error, right? It was me sort of building prototypes and sample apps, sending them out to family and friends, and just sort of like walking around and making sure it worked reliably. Over time, it's gotten a lot more sophisticated, but it was a lot of trial and error.
So you're touching on this a little bit, but let's go a little bit deeper into what sort of decisions and trade-offs did you have to make in the early days? You know, you're building an MVP. You can't build everything you want to build as a product person or an engineer out of the gate. You have to build just enough to prove your concept or just enough to get the market going. How did you make those decisions and what were they and how did you cope with them?
We obviously want to build a very big company, right? We want to be the location layer for any product or any service. I think in the early days, we needed to make some compromises and say, hey, what is that initial set of use cases or initial set of verticals that we want to go after? We were just two people, small startup. Uber had spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds of man hours building, you know, location tracking and geofencing. Whereas on the more consumer side of things, you know, so shopping and retail apps, food and dining apps, travel apps, there was a need for location awareness. There was a need for location-based features, but it wasn't as much of a core competency. And so there was more demand there with our very simple V1. So we kind of made the choice to, you know, focus on more consumer use cases to start. And, you know, location really is all about trade-offs, right? If you're thinking about trade-offs between accuracy and frequency and battery efficiency, you might choose a different location services implementation, you know, depending on your use case. We tried to pick a set of trade-offs that worked really well for consumer use cases, but wouldn't box us out of more on-demand or operational use cases. So we kind of settled on a, you know, what we thought was a smart V1. And I think our journey over the past 4 years has sort of been, how do we make the product more sophisticated, you know, make the product more flexible while still keeping it simple, right? While still giving you easy presets and smart defaults that work with most use cases. So kind of picking an initial niche, you know, designing an MVP accordingly, and then, you know, very sort of deliberately and carefully expanding the product surface and making it more flexible over time.
I think that's a perfect segue into my next question. How did you progress the product past that point? How have you matured it past the MVP stage?
I think it's evolved in a couple different ways. I think the first way that it's evolved is we obviously supported custom geofences. So, you know, for those unfamiliar with geofences, you can basically draw a virtual perimeter around a place or a region or a neighborhood. It might be a circle, might be a polygon, and you can listen for devices entering or exiting those regions. And so we started off supporting custom geofences. We also had customers asking us, hey, like, can you just tell us whenever somebody visits an airport? Can you tell us whenever somebody visits a McDonald's? You know, we don't necessarily know where all of the airports or all of the McDonald's are. Can you help us? And so we started adding additional, what we call context types, but they're really just out-of-the-box geofences. So a place database that made it easy for folks to, if they didn't want to create custom geofences, just monitor specific chains or categories, depending on a use case. If I'm building a travel app, you know, I might want to know if somebody is at a particular airport or at a hotel. If I'm building a shopping app, I might want to know if somebody is at, you know, a Walmart or a Target. And so just offering that out of the box for folks. We also had customers ask us to help them understand when somebody's in a particular country or state or city. So we added a context type called regions with some of those admin boundaries out of the box. So I think, you know, one of the ways the product has evolved is basically just giving you additional things out of the box, whether that's, you know, boundaries or place data that you can tap into. I think the second way that things have evolved is there's been an increasing focus on location data privacy over the last couple of years. You know, there are obviously amazing location-based app experiences that you can build that drive real value for end users. But there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And so thinking about tools that we can offer to help our customers build location-based experiences, but build it in the right way. You know, how do you request location permissions in a responsible, ethical way? How can you minimize the amount of data collected? Maybe you're just geofencing or just doing tracking when it's absolutely needed for your use case. Maybe you're pseudonymizing or anonymizing the data, or you have really tight data retention policies. So, you know, both from a product capabilities perspective and a business model perspective, you know, saw that there was an opportunity to help people build these great location-based experiences, but also do it in a very privacy-conscious way. And if you're going to take away two things about Radar, one is we want to be the most developer-friendly location data infrastructure, so, you know, powerful and flexible. And the second is that we want to be the most privacy-conscious location data infrastructure. And that's a function of our product offering, but also our business model and our approach to the space.
You know, moving into the next question, how did you build your roadmap? How did you decide, out of all those things that you progressed the product, how did you decide what was most important to do next?
We try to be very customer-driven in our product roadmap. You know, I would say the most common, most important input into our product roadmap is just sort of understanding, okay, where is the product today? What are the gaps, the things that maybe we don't offer out of the box or don't totally nail for folks that we could close, right? And we try to triangulate and say, hey, we heard, you know, 3 customers, 5 different prospects ask for this in the last quarter. What is a great product-driven solution to this that we can build this next quarter? And, you know, that input comes from customers directly. It comes from our sales team, you know, having conversations with prospects. It comes from our customer success team, having conversations with our existing customers. And we basically try to combine all of that and say, what can we build to basically expand the value that we offer for our customers and also bring us one step closer to our, you know, kind of big picture product vision. In Q1 of 2020, just sort of expanded outside of geofencing and launched a bunch of new building blocks, APIs for things like geocoding and place search and, you know, distance or ETA calculation. And a lot of that came out of things that our customers were asking for. And a lot of that also came out of, you know, our vision to be this location layer for every product and service. You know, these are gaps in our capabilities right now and are a very logical extension of our current offering to get us one step closer. So long story short, you know, try to very deliberately expand the capabilities of our platform to enable us to be that universal location layer. And a lot of that involves just sort of triangulating what our customers and prospects are asking for and just sort of moving things forward every quarter.
So how did you build your team? How did you go about building your team? And what did you look for in these people to know that they were the winning horses to join the Radar team?
In the very early days, it was me and my co-founder, Kobe, and I was the technical co-founder. So I was basically playing CTO, head of products, lead designer, all in one, and also sales engineer. My co-founder, Kobe, has more of a sales and BD background. So he was basically the account executive, the head of sales, the head of BD, all rolled into one. So we had a very clean division of responsibilities, and we were able to work together to move fast, to, you know, build the product and find product market fit. I think over time, you know, our technical needs became more complex. And so we were lucky enough to hire Tim Julien as our CTO. Tim actually worked with me and Kobe at Foursquare, has been in and around the location space for a while, and, you know, basically helped us level up and really scale the product. I think when we think about the types of folks that are successful at Radar, I mentioned being very customer oriented, very product driven. I think entrepreneurial folks who care about the big picture, who understand how all the pieces fit together and how the business works. If you're on the sales side of the house, ideally you're very product driven and technical. You know, you can understand how the platform solves problems for and adds value for our customers. You can connect the dots on customer feedback and, you know, feed that back into the product roadmap. And on the other side, you know, our engineering team, obviously building amazing features and scaling our product offering. But, you know, our most successful engineers are engineers who also care about what's happening on the customer side of the house, right? How much revenue are we shooting to gain this quarter? Which customers are in the pipeline or piloting, and what do we need to build to make them successful? So I think in general, entrepreneurial folks who are very product oriented and kind of care about the big picture are most successful at Radar. And we're about 35 people now. The team basically tripled in size last year. and just very lucky to have some tremendously talented folks across all different departments.
Let's talk about scalability a little bit. Kind of bouncing back to the MVP, did you build this initially to scale efficiently, or was that something you were fighting as you grew or knew you were going to have to fight at a certain point?
It's a great question. We didn't want to over-optimize early, right? So I think, you know, having an API, having a platform that can stand up to, you know, millions or billions of API requests doesn't really matter if nobody's using it, right? So I think in the early days, we were biased towards just how do we get any traction and throughput at all? You know, thinking less about scalability and thinking more about what does the product need to look and feel like to get that initial traction? And then kind of gradually shifting over time to scalability. You know, so we're now processing, you know, billions of locations per year from tens of millions of devices. Q2 2020 in particular, we're almost exclusively focused on scalability, developer experience, product quality. We are going to ship some new things as well, but this quarter in particular, almost exclusively focused on scalability. But, you know, in the early days, scalability doesn't matter if nobody's using your product, right? So I think it's just sort of a balance and kind of figuring out, given your level of traction, given where you are, just where on the spectrum do you need to fall to have the best business outcome?
So as you step out on the balcony and look across all you've built with Radar, what are you most proud of?
I think proud of a lot, you know, proud of the team that we've built, some of the use cases that we're unlocking for our customers. I still feel like we're just getting started, and I kind of feel this sense of restlessness where, you know, I look at a lot of the apps that I use every day do have some location component, but it might be very shallow. And there are a lot of apps that I use that should be location aware that aren't. I tend to focus more on the future and say, how do we make every app on every device location aware? How do we help unlock the next generation of app experiences? Not rest on our laurels too much and really just think about what can we unlock next and how do we make Radar truly synonymous with location. What's interesting is, you know, the landscape seems to evolve every quarter or two. You know, right now with the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, there's been an interesting shift in use cases, right? The retailers and QSRs that we're working with are focused less on, you know, building in-store experiences and focused more on curbside pickup and delivery and contactless payment experiences. Radar can help solve those use cases as well. So it seems like every quarter, every year, we kind of find a new set of use cases, the macro situation evolves and you know, feels like there's always more to do. So I think we think about how we can continue to expand our product offering to, you know, unlock new types of experiences and really just sort of look to the future and kind of try to keep the ball moving forward.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
You know, one thing that's been interesting is when we started Radar, we thought of Radar as a developer tool, right? We envisioned that it was going to be developers signing up for Radar, enterprise sales cycles, we'd be selling to the CTO as sort of the buying persona. I think what we realized when we got out in market was we were often selling to, you know, a head of product or a head of marketing that wanted to, you know, build a location-based product experience. They wanted to run a location-based campaign. You know, while developers were always important stakeholders, we kind of got away from our roots a little bit and focused on developer experience, but maybe not as much as we should have. I think we've learned over time that where we're adding the most value for customers and where we're the most successful is when we are focused on the technical persona. And so a lot of our focus this year is going to be on sort of getting back to our roots that we maybe strayed from a little bit and really focusing on value props, product surfaces, use cases for technical teams. So we'll be launching over the next couple quarters a bunch of new developer tools, kind of rethinking developer experience on our platform, thinking about ways that we can help folks self-serve on the platform. So, you know, not a mistake per se, but something that we learned just kind of through trial and error being in market. And I think finding that our initial intuition of being focused on adding value for developers, adding value for technical teams is our ultimate North Star. And I think we're firmly back on that track now.
Tell me a little more specifically, what's the future look like for the product and for your team?
We think about what other types of building blocks can we add in the future, right? So we went from geofencing and kind of background tracking focused use cases to, you know, offering new context types. So out of the box use cases, thinking more about app experiences that change based on your current location. You know, maybe you're sort of showing or unlocking content based on the user's location. And now sort of thinking about additional building blocks, new APIs for search, you know, so things like address autocomplete or store locators, you know, things like geocoding, if you want to drop a pin on a map and show the address that it corresponds to, things like routing and distance calculation. How do I understand, you know, am I 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away, walking or driving from this, you know, point of interest or store or whatever? So I think in the future, we're thinking about like what additional building blocks can we introduce next? Really all in service of helping technical teams build, you know, new types of location-based experiences. So I think like one theme for the future is new building blocks. I think another theme for the future is new integrations, right? So we want Radar to be the best point solution for location, but you can activate your location data in a bunch of different systems. You might want to send this to a push notification platform so you can trigger, you know, offers or reminders or alerts for folks. Maybe you want to tie this up with a feature flagging or A/B testing platform where you can more easily, you know, change the app experience or show content based on location. As we start to think about, you know, curbside pickup and delivery type use cases, maybe there are, you know, order management systems that we can plug into. So I think another possible direction is just sort of expanding our set of integrations and the types of partners that we work with. And then I think, you know, another possible direction is what can we help folks do from a data minimization and a privacy perspective, right? How can we help you build location-based app experiences, but do it in the most privacy-conscious way? And this may be, you know, sort of new strategies for on-device processing, you know, where location data never leaves the phone. It might be, you know, new ways to sort of control data minimization or data retention policies, you know, kind of think through, you know, new ways to anonymize or pseudonymize the data that you're collecting. So just, you know, help people build amazing experiences and kind of route their data to wherever it needs to go, but also do it in a very privacy conscious way. So that roughly is what I think the future looks like for the product. I think in terms of the team, what's been fun is we've gone from having, you know, no dedicated folks in a particular function to, you know, functions of one to, you know, each function sort of starting to scale. So, you know, Ryan, our director of marketing, joined us about a year ago. There was no marketing function to that point, right? We had written a bunch of blog posts, but that was sort of the extent of it. Ryan is building just a really incredible, you know, growth marketing and product marketing team at Radar. And that team will obviously, you know, continue to expand. Our engineering team is now 8 people. They're building a tremendous amount of products for 8 people. But, you know, as we continue to scale, you know, build even more new products, you know, growing that team as well. And then we're also about to start building out our product team. So we have a really talented product designer. We don't have any product managers yet. That's actually kind of my background. So I'm playing head of products. But over time, we'll build out a product management team as well. So, you know, have a very talented team right now, but, you know, continuing to scale functions that we've already started building. And then also the last few net new functions, you know, bringing in leaders to scale those functions over time.
So who influences the way you work, Nick? CEO, CTO, architect, or any person? Name a person you look up to and why.
Honestly, one of the people that influences my working style the most, and I think this is a sign of a very productive founder relationship, is my co-founder, Kobe. And I think one thing that's been great about working with Kobe is we tend to balance each other out, right? I tend to be more sort of technical and product focused. Kobe tends to be more sort of sales and go-to-market focused. Kobe gets the product side too. And, you know, Kobe's taught me a lot about sales and BD. You know, our skill sets complement each other well. We often, I think, refocus each other when one of us gets off track. When I'm low, he's high, and vice versa. And so we sort of tend to balance each other out. That's been a really great partnership so far. And I think Kobe and I have both learned a lot from each other and grown a lot over the last couple of years. I also think that, you know, my wife is a doctor. Obviously, she's been sort of quite busy and stressed out during this COVID-19 pandemic. She's an OBGYN, you know, so maybe not as much on the front lines as some other first responders and healthcare providers. But that helps put everything in context for me too, right? You know, we're obviously building what I think is a really exciting product and unlocking all sorts of awesome product experiences. You know, matters of life and death are a different story, and I think sort of seeing the way that she handles herself in stressful situations and just kind of like being exposed to everything that she goes through at work on a regular basis kind of helps put everything at Radar in perspective. So, you know, those are sort of two people that I draw inspiration and learnings from a lot.
So if you could go back to the beginning, what would you do differently, or what would you consider taking a different approach on?
Obviously, we're excited about our enterprise business. I think about ways that we can get not just big enterprises using Radar, but also tens or hundreds of thousands of developers using Radar as well. That's a function of, is your offering self-serve? What is the product mix that you're offering? And I think if we're going to be really successful in the long term, we need to build a platform that is synonymous with location in the minds of all developers, in much the same way that I think Stripe has done with payments or Twilio has done with communications. And so I think if I could go back to the beginning, hindsight being 2020, I think I would prioritize some of those investments in developer experience a little bit earlier. I think we've done a good job, but I think we could be doing an even better job and wish we could have gotten an earlier head start there.
Last question, Nick. You're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They want to show it off to the world. They can't wait to show it to you just sitting right next to them on the plane. What advice would you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
One part of my story that I sort of skipped over was between Handy and Radar, I actually worked on for about half a year a couple other startup ideas that didn't work. These were a bunch of different social app ideas that I had that just really didn't get any traction. What's been great about Radar is two things. One, I think there's a high degree of founder market fit, meaning I think Kobe and I are uniquely well suited to build this product, to build this business. I think in order to be successful, I think in order to raise money from investors, you basically need to be able to convince investors that you are like the best people in the world to build whatever it is you're working on. And so I think the first piece of advice would be make sure there's a high degree of founder product or founder market fit. It's going to let you tell the most effective story. It's going to let you build the most successful business. So I think that's one piece. I think the second piece is, build something that you would be proud of, even if it didn't work out. I don't know how Radar is going to end up. I'd like to think that we're going to build this iconic location layer for every product and service on every device. But there's certainly a chance that things don't work out. But what I do know is that regardless of how things end, I'll be really proud that I spent, 4+ years of my life working on this idea. I think it's an important product and service. I think it's a fascinating problem space, and I'll have no regrets regardless of the way that it turns out. So, make sure you're working on something that you're uniquely well-suited to solve, and make sure you're working on something that you'd be proud of regardless of how it ended. Either way, you're going to learn a lot, but I think those two things are really important, and I've learned that firsthand working on Radar and a handful of other startup ideas as well.
That's great advice. Well, Nick, thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for being on the show and telling the creation story of Radar.
Thanks, Noah.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. Support the show on patreon.com/codestory for just $5 to $10 a month. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save